Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to come and worship the Lord on this holy day. You know, for me, I kind of personally like the smaller crowds. It seems a little easier to talk. It's funny, those who know me outside of church, one-on-one, I can be kind of a loudmouth, but you put me in front of several people, I'm the quietest person in this room. Not that I'm trying to be hypocritical, but I guess I'm just afraid of certain things. You know, normally when I prepare for a sermon, I normally have a set of notes that throughout the day at work, if I think of something, I write it down and I stick it in my truck. And normally when I'm called upon to preach a sermon, I normally go to my little pool of notes in my truck and I usually build off that, and that every time that's always worked. When I found out I was on the schedule this time, I went and I couldn't make sense of anything I had in there, and nothing ever made sense, and I thought, wow, this time I might be in trouble. And you know, I heard an elder speaking to me about a week ago, thereabouts. I was talking to him. He was talking about something that it's very intriguing. It's called the Four Clouds Over Zion. I think most saints have probably heard about it. But this was new to me. I'd heard of it, but I'd never actually gone and read the testimony. A man named Ray, I believe his last name is pronounced Huguet. Ray Huguet, I believe his name is. In 1971, he had a vision. I left my notes in my truck at home, so I'll have to piece together what I can remember for you this evening. But in his vision, he was sitting in a service, and in his vision, he began to see everything that he was looking at kind of dissipate away, and he was finally shown the city of Zion, and he saw these four clouds hanging over Zion and creating a big shadow over it, and he began to wonder, Well, why haven't they removed those? I mean, the sun is so beautiful. Everything else is in the sunshine except for Zion. And the Lord made it known to him that those were the four clouds over Zion, and that they represented four parts of the law that we were not honoring. The first one that Ray mentions is keeping the Sabbath day holy. Now, everything I'm going to bring up tonight, I'm guilty of, just the same as anybody else. I'm guilty pretty bad about all these, but I'm going to start with these. I'm going to name them all off, and I'm going to go through them one by one. First one was keeping the Sabbath day holy. The second one was being a good steward. And being a good steward isn't just simply entailing in money. It's involved in everything else, in your life, in your time, in your land, or whatever you own. The third one is the marriage covenant. We're not teaching our children the sanctity of the marriage covenant. The fourth one is your temple, to keep your temple clean. I'm going to start with the first one. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. How important the Sabbath is, to take time throughout on the Sabbath to remember the Lord your God. You know, throughout the day, you know, I work construction, so I get hungry pretty easily. And if I don't have food, I get cranky, I get bitter. I'm not very fun to be around. I may not be that fun to be around in the first place, but I'm really not when I'm hungry. And boy, I need that food. On Sundays, we really need that food, that spiritual food the Lord has to give to us. You know, sometimes it seems so sweet and so wonderful and so powerful, you know, that you just want to soak it up all day long. And sometimes you don't seem to feel that way. It's kind of like whenever you're sitting and eating vegetables, as opposed to, well, if you're like me, you love mashed potatoes and gravy. Now, I'm sorry if I'm revealing that one of my sins is gluttony, but Thanksgiving, I may not even touch the pie or the cake. I will sit and I'll just eat, you know, taters and gravy and noodles, and won't have a speck of sugar or anything bad in it. It'll be all homegrown, homemade, and it's probably good for you. But you know, not every meal is going to taste like that. But you know, we really need to eat healthy spiritually, and we cannot miss these Sundays. I know Christ said that man was not made for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath for man. But the Sabbath is a two-way street. It's a communion with our God. Simply going to church, just showing up at church like I've done this evening, will not automatically guarantee that you are communing with God. You've got to come prepared. You've got to be able to wipe your mind away of things that are already in your mind. Second problem that we have, saints have, that's keeping the light from shining down upon us, the stewardship. You know what? I've been brought up, you know, understanding that we have our tithing, but stewardship goes so much more beyond that. You know, as a kid, you know, it didn't bother me to go down and chop down a few trees. You know, where I grew up, we had a pretty good-sized field to cross. It was probably about a half mile back to the tree line. And then in the trees, there was probably about a 120-acre solid block of timber that wasn't touched by man. It was just pretty much just untouched. And we'd go back there. It didn't bother us to, you know, cut a few trees down, make a bridge across a creek or something. It was nice to go back there and play, or sometimes we'd go hunting. And I remember one time, I took my 22 out, and I remember I'd shot a couple birds, and I was pretty proud of being able to hit these birds at the distance. And I went home talking to Dad about it, and he said, "Well, did you eat them?" And I thought, "Well, no, they're just birds." And I got a pretty good scolding out of that one, because you know we're supposed to be stewards of everything we have, your tools, your time. You're supposed to be accountable for everything you have, everything you do. Being a steward is the relating of everything that you do throughout your day as how it relates to the building of the kingdom of Zion. The third thing, and this is probably one of the biggest things that people fail at, is honoring your marriage covenant. You know, this is a real tough one, especially amongst the saints nowadays. You know that the divorce rate amongst the saints is just as high as it is in the rest of the world, and it's pretty shameful. You know, I've recently been converted to, I wouldn't say converted, but I've recently came under the impression of a different viewpoint. You know, in society you learn about a 50-50 viewpoint, and 50-50 is a viewpoint for divorce. That's not a viewpoint for a successful marriage. You know, keeping score, keeping track, and things like that. That's for the birds right there. That does not work. It's a 100-100 deal. And whether my wife deserves it or not, I'm supposed to give her my 100 at all times. I don't always do it, and I don't deserve her 100. Although I'd say she probably does better than I do about giving her 100. But you know, that's the way it's supposed to work. I want to remind you of the story of Hosea. If you go back in the story of Hosea, the Lord tells Hosea, go take you a wife among whoredoms. And brings her home, makes him his wife. And you know the story. She ends up leaving him and goes back to her ways of sinning and going from one man to the next. And this is her way of life, and comes a point when the Lord hedges up her ways of life so that she can't sustain herself living the way that she had done before, until she finally says, "Well, it's finally best for me just to go back to my first husband." And you know, after all that, Hosea was supposed to sell some of his goods so he can buy flax and wool, so that he can go out and clothe the nakedness of his wife, his returned wife. You know, to you men, I will say, very simply, I don't think any of us have a wife like that. But yet, we are still supposed to be like a savior to our wives. This is a new concept for me. I was asked, you know, if I was being a savior to my wife, and it didn't quite click with me at first. But you know, we as men have to be saviors to our wives. That's what Christ is to the church. That's the example that God has given us. You know, so many times I hear at work, you know, men complaining, well, my wife this or my wife that, or sometimes I hear some ladies talking about, well, my knuckle-dragging husband, you know, this or that. You know, as far as the men go, you're supposed to be a savior to a wife, your wife. It doesn't matter whether she deserves your love or not. You know, it doesn't matter how she acts or anything. You know, you're supposed to be there for her. You know, it's Christ's specialty. He has made it his point in our lives. It's his specialty to come among sinners, people with spots and stripes, people with all walks of life, people of all kinds of problems. That's his specialty, to fix broken things. And as men, that should be our job. Likewise to the women folks, sorry if I sound like a hillbilly. That I just realized that probably sounds a lot like that. To the wives, you know, I know your husband doesn't deserve it. Your husband doesn't deserve the treatment of the Lord. I know I don't deserve anything from my wife. But you know, the scriptures still say, you know, to be submissive to your husband, to love your husband. And that's not kosher with today's society. It's not kosher at all. But you know, this is something that we as saints have totally just allowed to go untouched. We've let the world teach our children, and most of us are products of being taught by the world of how marriage works. Let me tell you, watching the Brady Bunch or some of those old shows are not going to teach you the right way of how marriage works. You know, where they come at each other like a political debate, where they're trying to measure who's done the most in the marriage. That's just not the way it's supposed to work. The fourth thing is your temple clean? I think every saint probably already knows about the word of wisdom. You can see the hand of wicked and conspiring men, as what the Doctrine and Covenants calls it, in every food product that's sold on the shelves in the store. You can see these things everywhere. You know, the hard times that are just about to come, if you're not obeying the word of wisdom and you're not in a physical state where you can do anything because of disobedience to the word of wisdom, do you think the Lord's going to say, well, I know you disobeyed, but we're just going to ignore that and you're just going to have the strength anyway? He's given us so much warning, and he may very well have mercy, but I think that our mercy has gone on for so long. You know, the times are going to get hard, and we're going to need to be able to go out and to preach the gospel to folks whenever we're told to. When people are humbled down, when times are hard, that's when they're open up to answers. You ever go talk to folks nowadays, everybody's already got an answer into their head. Nope, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the gospel. I don't want to be changed. You can't change me. I'm the way I am. You know, Ray Huguette talks about how he was told that we've got to be, we have to clean up the word he used was our appetite physically and mentally. And I thought, well, what does he mean by mentally? And it dawned on me, have you ever tried to sit down and fast and pray before the Lord, and you know, things from on the television start coming to your mind, you know, even if your television's off, something that you've watched or a song that you've heard off the radio, and things start randomly coming through your mind, and you're thinking, well, that's not what the Lord wants me to think about. That's sinful and wrong, and I shouldn't be thinking about that. And you know, you try to refocus. Folks, our minds are full and cluttered full of things of the world. There's no way that the Lord's going to be able to speak to us and reach our heart if our cup's already full. He can't fill it. It's already full. How's the Lord going to fill it any more than what it already is if we've already got full and crammed full of all the cluttering things in our lives? You know, I love my music. I suppose my generation, the sins that we like to indulge in, it's a lot of music. You know, most of my generation, they like to put earphones in or earplugs in, and they like to just block everybody else out. And the teenagers these days, they just love to block their parents out. They just put that in there and walk on. And, you know, folks, that's not conducive to the cause of Zion. I want to see the light, folks. I want to remove these clouds. I want to start getting rid of these things. I can't tell you how many saints I know that have dishonored these, and including myself, I've dishonored the majority of these things I've mentioned. And, you know, it's causing us to hurt. You know, nothing grows in the shade hardly near as good as what it does in the sun. We're alive still. The Lord's gospel is still alive, but we've got to remove these clouds. We've got to start obeying the commands of the Lord. You know, each and every one of us have a place in our church community. The church should be the center of every community. It should be the heart of everything. You know, all of my work that I work, my dad and I, we run our own business. I think most everybody here knows that. But you know what? We've known everybody in that community since my dad was young, since my grandfather was young. I'm the sixth generation of Specker in Odessa. I'm not trying to brag or anything, but there's been several other families that have that same background, been there for six or eight generations, and we all know each other. Nobody's ever moved out. And we all work together. We're all community in a lot of ways. If somebody does something wrong, everybody knows about it, and there's always some good elbowing going on. But you know, the community of a church, that adheres to the laws of Christ, that should be the center of the community, the center of all your work, all that you do. You know, I go and I see people every day, and see people that I've known for a long time. They're not church members, but they're likely to listen to what I have to say. I go work under the greasy hood of somebody's car and help them out a little bit, and after a while they'll loosen up enough where, well, they trust me after that. Or you know, just enough to listen to the gospel just a little bit, or might go help some farmer. You know, right now it's picking time, so I mean it's pretty busy. And so you know, you get to know a lot of folks, and you know, after they've abused you a little bit, or you know, told you what they thought of your beliefs or whatever, and you keep working, you keep doing a good job. After a while, you're in a place in their hearts. We need to invite the communities to see who we are in our church communities. I've fallen so far short of being able to go out and testify to my neighbors. I like to go home. I like to keep to myself. I like to keep this gospel to myself sometimes. It's not that I don't want to share it. It's just that personality-wise, I like to just go home, keep to my little intermediate family and be left alone. I just want to leave others alone. I saw a squirrel on the post the other day while I was trying to do some reading, and I noticed that you know, that's what animals do. Animals don't disobey anything that the Lord has told them to do. They don't disobey anything, but they don't spread the gospel. That's something different about us. We who are made in the image of God, we who are given the value of eternal souls or eternal life. That's something that we've really got to work on in our communities. Show them who we are. And we're not going to be able to show them who we really are if there's no light shedding on us. There's not very much light shedding down. It's not that God's not shining. It's just that we won't remove those clouds. We won't remove those sins from our lives. Everyone has a place in our spiritual communities, folks. Here a while back, a man that has always been our mechanic in the town I come from, his name's Kenny. You know what? Kenny he's a good mechanic. Just like about like any other mechanic, you walk away one time thinking, "Man, I got a great price on this," and the next time you think, "Man, I think he gouged me a little bit." Just like any mechanic, but in the end, you know he's doing you fair, and his work's always been good. Anytime you want to drop it off, you know, your vehicle off, your car off, your truck, your tractor. He'll, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 3 in the morning or 3 in the afternoon. It doesn't matter. As soon as he wakes up the next morning, he'll call you. He knows whose tractor is whose vehicle is whose. And if you get a new one, I've dropped a new car off at his place before, and he called me the next day and said, "Hey, is this yours?" I don't know how he knew, but the man knew everybody's vehicle, and he knew it couldn't have been, you know, somebody else. I guess he just narrowed it down. But the man was good with folks. He's working around with the community. He knew how to make things doable and affordable for folks. You know, here a while back, I bought a new truck because my old one broke down and it just wasn't worth fixing no more. Well, about that time, he had some problems. Thought he was going to lose his shop and his house and everything. And so he went to work for a different company doing some other odd-end things. He was going to quit mechanicking. And so I thought, okay, well, that's all right. You know, a lot of folks didn't think much about it until the time came when I needed something done on my brand-new truck. Well, it's not brand-new, but it's new to me. And had some problems, and I just couldn't figure it out. You know, you can only learn so much on YouTube unless you're a mechanic or something. You know, I just can't figure out everything. And so, you know, I got to where I was looking around asking folks, you know, different mechanics from different towns and such, and some of them didn't want to mess with a diesel truck, which is what my new truck is. And I just started getting desperate because I couldn't fix this problem here. I had this new truck and a truck payment. I had work that I needed to use this truck for to get done, and I wasn't getting it done. And finally I thought, you know, I'll just give Kenny a call. Maybe he can lead me in the right direction. Well, come to find out, he kept everything. He kept his shop. He kept everything. And so I was able to drop my truck off, and within a couple of days, I had everything good and going again. You know, I talked to several other people in the community shortly after that. They had the same problem. Something came up while they thought he wasn't doing it anymore. A person doesn't realize how important a person is in their community until they need them and they're not there. That's just amazing how that works. But you know, the bad thing is whenever we get used to not being able to depend on folks. I've been that person before where people have gotten used to not being able to depend on me. And let me tell you, whenever you realize that you're no longer dependable, it kind of hurts. But you know, that's how most of us as Latter-day Saints have become. We're no longer dependable on certain aspects of life. I got a neighbor that the guy is the most full-hearted, given person I've ever known. He gives everything, asks nothing in return. If somebody's going to get the short end of the stick, he's going to make sure it's him. He doesn't want anybody else to have it. Anytime I've ever been stuck in a ditch or, you know, stuck in the snow, that man has been the first out to try to come out, and he'll take off work. The man would travel 100 miles. I know everybody knows somebody like this. But, you know, I would really like for the saints to be known for this, to be known for those who will travel 100 miles for a stranger just to make sure that they get out of a ditch. I don't know about you folks. I'm just ready to see the light again. I really want to see it. I think it has a lot to do with the endowment. I think it has a lot to do with the future of what's been prophesied. I would like to encourage everyone to look at your homes, look at who you are, and what your actions tell about you, and ask yourself, what do I need to change? Is there something I need to get rid of out of my home so that I'm not tempted to sin? Is there something I need to do differently? My message is short this evening because this is all I've been given to preach. So I guess I better stop before I start practicing priestcraft, so to speak. So, good evening.